Some of you may have been over to Rome and gone into the Vatican and seen the ceiling of the beautiful Sistine Chapel painted by Michelangelo. And you go through there and they've got guides, and these guides are trained and they have their speeches all memorized, and they can tell you, now you look here and you see, and this means that, and that means this, and that over there means something else, and you just stand there and drink it all in. But let me ask you a question. How would you like to take that same tour? Not with a guide who had a speech prepared for him or her, and who sort of just spit it out by rote. But how would you like to take that tour with Michelangelo, the artist, as the guide? Think it'd be different? Well, see, Job's getting that kind of tour. Job is getting it with Michelangelo's creator. Somebody who really knows. Somebody who can explain it to me better. So God continues his questions here. Chapter 38 and verse 8. Or who enclosed the sea with doors when bursting forth it went out from the womb? When I made a cloud its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band, and I placed boundaries on it, and I set a bolt and doors, and I said, thus far shall you come, but no farther, and here shall your proud waves stop. Question. Who enclosed the sea? Job, did you do that? Absolutely not. Job doesn't have the power. Job can't make it. High tide, Job can't make it low tide. All Job can do is stand there and watch it. All Job can do is rejoice that there is some control on it, so that he is not constantly overwhelmed, so that his place by the shore one day doesn't wind up 20 miles from the sea. Or the next day, 20 miles offshore. Thus far shalt thou come and no farther. God did it. In the first question, God was pictured as a builder, laying the foundation of the world and drawing the lines and erecting it. Here God is pictured as a mother, giving birth to the sea and wrapping it in the clothing of the clouds, the darkness, the coastlines. Now, what should Job learn from this? Question. Does the ocean know its place? And who put the ocean in its place? God did. Now, what lesson does Job learn? If the ocean knows its place, shouldn't Job? Shouldn't Job know his place? And shouldn't Job recognize that God has put man into this scheme of things, and that he has given him certain responsibilities, and that he has said to man, thus far shalt thou go and no farther? Job fails again. Next question. Verses 12 to 15. Job, who commands the sun? Have you ever in your life commanded the morning and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It's changed like clay under the seal, and they stand forth like a garment. And from the wicked their light is withheld, and the uplifted arm is broken. How is God pictured here in relationship to the Son? Who commands the Son? Not Job, but God. And God commands the Son like a general commands his troops. Now, you and I talk about the laws of nature. Truth of the matter is, there isn't any such thing as a law of nature. What it is a description of what God does in his world. It is a law of nature that the sun comes up in the east. Law? I mean, what law is there that commands, that causes the sun to come up in the east? There isn't any. Well, then what are we saying? We're saying we're describing what God does. God commands the sun. And it comes up in the east. And so we call it a law of nature, something that happens consistently and time again. So we assume there must be some law governing. Of course, most folks don't stop to think that that implies a lawgiver, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not the purpose for which we're going into all of this morning. But God orders the sun around like a general, and that's something Job has never done. Well, good morning, Job. Sun's not up this morning. Would you take care of that, Job? Job can't do it. I can't do it. As a matter of fact, you and I, we can combine everything we know. We can combine everything that we have. Put all our smarts and everything that our smarts has gotten us together. And we still can't make the sun move forward. We can't make it move backward. We can't make it move up. We can't make it move down. All we can do is sit there and enjoy it. Unless you've got as little hair on your head as I do, and then it sunburns your head. Might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it. Sun comes up, it's an implication that the wicked like to perform their evil deeds in darkness. It's sort of like you take a tablecloth and you shake the crumbs out of it. When the sun comes up and its light spreads like a blanket or a tablecloth over the earth, it's sort of pictured shaking it and the wicked go for cover. It's changed like clay under the seal. What happens to clay when you put a seal on it? It molds to it. It gets an imprint. You can see things in it. And isn't that a beautiful description of sort of... Have you ever just sat and watched the morning? The darkness fade away. The dawn rise. And the light gently began to spread across the earth. And you begin to see the outlines and the shapes. That's what he's talking about here. You see this indescribable lump like clay, and the morning stamps it. And you can then begin to see things like clay under the seal. They stand forth like a garment, and from the wicked their light is withheld, and the uplifted arm is broken. When the sun comes up, the world is enlightened, didn't it? So Job, don't you think you ought to be enlightened in your comments about God? Next question. Job, have you explored the underworld? Verses 16 to 18. Have you entered into the springs of the sea, or have you walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Have you understood the expanse of the earth? Tell me if you know all of this. Here is another realm that is beyond the reach of Job. And God says, Job, yeah, if you're so smart, if you're ready to handle all of these things, then why don't you tell me what's down there in the sea? Job, why don't you tell me what's over here in the abyss? What happens, Job, over here when you die? What's over there in that world? Why don't you reveal that to me, Job, if you know it? And how does Job respond? What does he tell God?
Everything he knows.
Job is silent. Job has nothing to say. Now, question. If Job cannot understand the mysteries of the underworld and the afterlife, how can he hope to commence, to begin, to understand and explain the mysteries of God? Now, this is the Job, remember, who has been saying, come on, God. I want to talk with you. Have you ever done that? Have you ever? Oh, I have. I've come home on occasion and I want to talk to Millie. And when I got there and started that conversation, it didn't turn out to be nearly as much fun as I thought it was going to be. I think I've told you this story before. But I recall coming home on one occasion and Millie had had the audacity, the temerity, if you please, to go into my study and straighten it up. Now, if there's anything in this world I cannot stand, it is somebody messing around in my study and straightening up all of my indiscreet piles, the books that I have stacked on the floor over there, and the books that I have stacked on the floor over there, and the past 27 issues of several magazines stacked over here that I know where they are. I can lay my hands on them. And I put them there so I can ignore them in an orderly fashion. And I came home, and I mean, there wasn't a book on the floor. There wasn't a paper on the desk. Millie, I won't talk to you. You know I don't like you to mess with my study. Well, somebody's got to. And while we're talking about it, she continued, what's that over there? Well, that's a printer. Is it new? Now, over the years, Eric and I hate to say this because now she's going to catch on. Pat says he doesn't think that'll be a problem. Alan says she already has. But Eric and I have developed this rule that if we can go get a piece of new equipment and smuggle it into the house, and get it set up without Millie realizing that it is there, and she doesn't see it for a period of 2 weeks. That's the 2-week rule. It, I think, is a part of the standard marriage ceremony. And she says, how long have you had it? Is it new? You're permitted to respond, I've had it a while. So she says, is it new? Well, I've had it a while. Then why did I find another one just like it up in the closet? Well, you see, this one does some things that other one wouldn't do. And then it went from bad to worse. And while we're talking, I was just up in the attic putting some of this stuff away. Are you replacing all of that stereo? Oh, no. Then why does it look like Radio Shack upstairs? To which I responded in my most masculine and in my most head of the house, manly manner. Honey, I sure like the way you straightened up my office. Now, you know, sometimes you just can't wait to have a conversation, and when you get there, it's not nearly as much fun as you thought it's going to be. It's like the old story of the dog that goes out to catch a car. It's not nearly as much fun as he thought he's going to be when he catches it. And that's what's happening to Job here. Come on, God, I want to talk to you. And now God has come down, and God is talking to Job. And Job is faring a whole lot worse than I did in that conversation with Millie. Job's not enjoying it nearly as much. Job, you can't explain any of these things. And truth of the matter is, Job, I can't explain it to you. You realize that God trying to explain His ways to us, human beings, would be sort of like trying to pour the Atlantic Ocean into a Dixie cup. It just isn't going to fit. And every once in a while, you and I get to talking, and we say, boy, won't it be nice to be in heaven? We'll see, we'll understand as God understands. No, we won't. Now, it may well be, and I will admit that we will see some things and know some things in heaven that we will not know here. But we are no more going to be God in heaven than we are on earth. So let us not make the mistake of assuming that everything, we just don't know everything God knows after a while. God cannot explain it to us. And faith does not ask for explanations. Faith simply believes. Next question. Job, who orders the light? Verses 19 to 21. Where is the way to the dwelling of light and darkness? Where is its place, that you may take it to its territory, and that you may discern the paths to its home? You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Here, light and darkness are personified as a person who must be led to their place. And God simply asked Job, can you do this? Can you lead the light to its place? Can you lead the darkness to its place? If Job were old enough to have been present when it all happened, maybe he would know the answer. But the implication of God's question really is simply to point out to Job that, Job, you were not there. You weren't around. Realize, Job, I did this without your help. You know, some of us had determined a long time ago that God just can't get along without our advice. And God's advising Job, and through Job advising us, I can get along without you, thank you very much. I don't need your advice to run my world and know how to operate it. Now, what does Job need to learn? Job, if you can't command the light, if you can't control the light, you must be in the dark about God. And you just need to listen to what I have to say and accept the fact that I am God. Job, accept your limitations and let God be God. Is that hard for us to do? We sit down, we read the Word of God. And we want to respond, "Now, God, I'm sure you didn't mean that." Well, now, God, that might be nice, and that might be one way to do it, but God, let me suggest to you another one that I like a little bit better, and that's a little bit more convenient for me, and that is a little bit more to my liking and my satisfaction. Doesn't God need to give us a test? And basically tell us, "I can do very well without that advice. Thank you very much." Job does not order the light. Next question. Job, who sends the snow and the hail? Have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the storehouses of the hail? Which I reserved for the time of distress, for the day of war and battle. Where is the way that the light is divided, or the east wind scattered on the earth? Figurative language, it's sort of as if God is saying, "You seen these big refrigerators I've got up here? The storehouses of the snow and the hail, where I keep it before I send it upon the earth, which I reserve for the time of distress, for the day of war and battle." Can you think of some times when snow and hail have affected the history of the world? I bet you can. 3 different centuries, as a matter of fact. All in the same place. Charles XII of Sweden, Napoleon, Hitler. Ask them all about Russian winters. Go back into the Old Testament. Recall when Joshua went to help the people of Gideon. Or Gibeon, I should say. Beg your pardon. And Joshua put them to flight, and God sent hail. And the Scripture says that more people died that day from the hailstones than fell in the battle. That's over in Joshua chapter 10. Now, snow and hail are a fairly common event, aren't they? Job, if you can't explain even these common events, how can you ever hope to explain the providence of God? Question sort of answers itself, doesn't it? Next question. Who sends the rain and the lightning? Verses 25 to 28. Who has cleft a channel for the flood, or a way for the thunderbolt, to bring rain on a land without people, on a desert without a man in it? To satisfy the waste and desolate land, and to make the seeds of grass to sprout? Has the rain a father, or who has begotten the drops of dew? Could Job tell the rain when and where to pour? Not likely. Some folks have tried. They've gotten out and they've engaged in rain dances. You've all seen them on the TV, if nowhere else. They've done all kinds of other things, trying to make it rain, trying to end a drought. But the closest man has ever come to being able to make it do anything is to go up and see the clouds with a little dry ice. and hope to create some reaction, but you know, who sent the clouds?
I read somewhere that the secret to the success of the rain dance is tangent.
Bill says he read somewhere that the secret of success for a rain dance is timing. And I think that's exactly correct. Job can't command the rain. He can't say, I think I need a little rain today, please. And his flowers, his crops are watered gently. And he can't say, okay, I've had enough now. And cut it off. God controls these events. But there's another question here. Not only does God control it, but God sends the rain out in desolate places to make the flowers bloom when there's nobody there to see them. Why in the world do you reckon God would waste water like that? You know, there's a rule. Until I got a sprinkler system at the house. There was a rule at our house that you had to let at least the foot closest to the driveway and the street die. Because you didn't waste water. You don't want to water the concrete. Well, you got to water a little concrete to water all the grass, see? Now rain kills my yard. Because the very minute we get a little rain, Millie turns the sprinkler system off. We don't need it now. And it doesn't get turned back on for a month or two until the grass is nice and brown. But that's beside the point. Why does God send that rain out there? And there's nobody to see? You think maybe it's because God just takes delight in His creation? It is His world. And in addition, there are His little creatures out there. We're going to talk more about God's creatures here in a moment. When we go from talking about the earth and things related to it, as we talked last Sunday, we're going to go to the zoo. And God's going to ask us some questions about His animals. But Job, can you do this? No. God does it. What's the message? God reigns. R-A-I-N-S. Because God reigns. R-E-I-G-N-S. They sound alike, but they're spelled so differently. But Job, that's my message for you. I can take care of it, thank you. Next question. 29 and 30. Job, who makes the ice? From whose womb has come the ice and the frost of heaven? Who's given it birth? Water becomes hard like stone, and the surface of the deep is in prison. How much you know about ice, Job? How is it born? How is it created? Well, you and I know a lot about ice today. We can create ice, can't we? But can you create it like God creates it? Go create some ice in your ice tray. And I know everybody's, well, not everybody, some of you are too young. You've never known the old-fashioned ice trays. You thought God made ice in ice makers. But in the old-fashioned ice tray, you remember pulling those things out? And you'd have the cube beginning to form, and there'd be a hollow place in the middle where it hadn't frozen yet. It was freezing from the outside and the bottom up. What if God made ice like that? What would happen to the fish that live on the bottom and that feed on the bottom? That depend on the bottom for food? So it'd be rough on those little fellas, wouldn't it? They'd starve to death. When God makes ice, the top freezes first. Job, how much you know about making ice? Now, Job, if you can't grasp this simple truth, How do you ever hope to grasp the working of God? Next question. Who directs the planets? Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth a constellation in its season and guide the bear with her satellites? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens are fixed their rule over the earth? See, Job knew that these heavenly bodies ruled over the earth long before man figured it out. Nobody in his day knew. How do these planets and the sun and the moon rule over the earth? They create the seasons. They govern the ebb, the flow, the tide of the sea. They create light and darkness. Did Job understand the movements of these planets? Could Job steer them across the sky and say, "No, I don't think I want you. I think I'd like you over there." All Job could do was to stand and look up at the beautiful starry heavens and proclaim, "How great thou art." Next question. Who forms the clouds? Verses 34 to 38. Can you lift up your voice to the clouds so that an abundance of water may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, "Here we are"? Or who has put wisdom in the innermost being, or who has given understanding to the mind? Who can count the clouds by wisdom or tip the water jars of the heavens when the dust hardens into a mass and the clouds stick together? Could Job do that? Can Job create the clouds? Can he command the clouds? Can he call them forth? Can he send them away? Can he direct the lightning bolt? Can he say to the lightning bolt, "I want you to hit there. I want you to hit there. I want you to strike yonder"? We've already talked about the fact that he can't tell the clouds where to go and deposit their water. Who controls it? Only God controls nature. What's the lesson? Job. If only God controls nature, don't you think it is only God who ought to control your life? And you simply be subservient to that control? End of the first test. What grade did Job make? A zero. Not a single question did Job get correct. Job wound up in the position of the young man who was wrapping up his first semester, which ended right before Christmas. Was called in to take his final examination, and he looked at the examination, couldn't answer a one, so he thought, "I'll just throw myself on the goodness and grace of the professor and the sentiment of the season." So he wrote on his blank examination paper, "I don't know the answer to these questions. God does. Merry Christmas." He got back, received his paper, on which the professor had written, "You get a zero. God gets 100. Happy New Year." And that's sort of where Job is, isn't it? Job gets zero. Job can't answer a single question. God has started to impress upon Job the fact that, Job, you know so very little. Not to make Job feel small, not to make Job feel little, not to belittle Job, but to impress upon Job that I am God. Now, sometimes that's not the answer we want. As a matter of fact, psychologists tell us today, or used to tell us, I don't know. I never pay much attention to them anyway. That when you are raising your children, and they come in, and they are given a command, though we're also told we don't give commands anymore, you make a request. And all of a sudden, that little boy or that little girl, sort of like you and I when we were that age, look up and say, why? That we are to sit down with them and give them a rational, full-blown explanation. And we are not to say, because I am Daddy. Frankly, I think that's a pretty good reason. But that's what God is doing with Job. Job, I am God, and you need to realize that. And when you realize that and you have faith in me and know that I control things and that everything will work out, even though you may be inconvenienced and even though you may suffer losses and even though you may be ill and even though you may lose loved ones, everything will be fine if you will leave it with me. If you want to mess it up, then you just inject your think-sos and your want-sos and your desires and you take things out of the control of God's hands and you will mess it up beyond belief. I am Jehovah. Now, we'll stop here for the morning because right here we end the questions about God's universe and God, as I say, takes Job to the zoo. This is going to be easier, isn't it? We know all about the animals, don't we? We study it. We learn it. We sit on our mother's laps and we go through the nursery books and we look at the little pigs and we look at the horses and we look at the cows and we learn to say the words and we learn what they do and so on and so forth. We're going to make a much better grade on this one, aren't we? Job's going to flunk again. And so will you and I. Because we do no more in no more about the questions God's going to ask about His animals than we knew about God's earth and sky. Where is it all heading? We'll find out. Alright? The Bible has lots of science in it. It is not a book of science. Not intended to be a book of science. But everywhere it touches on science, it does so accurately and often, that back then always, beyond the knowledge of its day. It should have been. It should have been. As we suggested when we started into this section, it was enough for Job that God came and spoke to him because Job had been feeling, the main thing that Job felt he had lost was his relationship with God, and God's coming back and speaking to Job, let him know that that was not so. So yes, I think that is true. Any other comments here? All right. Appreciate your presence this morning. See you next Lord's Day morning.